Welcome to The Hours. This is a podcast for coaches at all levels who want to think, teach, and lead better. I'm Mark Cassio, joined by Tyler Costin, and we call this The Hours because this is where we get to deep dive and have real conversations and spend real time on the things that actually matter. You can get the show notes and tools from today's episode in our weekly newsletter, so check out the link below. Let's get into this week's episode. As we sit here today, it's mid-February, so coaches are getting late in their season, and each month in Savvy, we deep dive into a topic each month. This month, we're helping coaches win at the right time. So at the end of the season, we want to be 100% dialed in, want to be playing our best basketball and peaking at the right time. So I'm going to offer two approaches here to help your team play better offensively down the stretch. But first, I'm going to talk about a hedgehog and a fox. So a hedgehog has one defense. If it gets in trouble, it curls up in a ball, so all of its spikes are exposed, and that's the only thing that it does. So it's very singularly focused. A fox can survive in multiple ways. It's, they could be sly, they can be adaptable to their environment, so you don't really know how a fox would defend itself. And I'm going to relate this to coaching, I promise. So at Savvy, we believe more in being singularly focused, is like have really, really high clarity, and we believe that simplicity wins. However, I think there's a lot of benefits in having the mindset of a fox as well. So if you're a fox right now, and you're thinking about your team, and you got to get better at rebounding, you got to get better at breaking the press, you got to be better at ball screen defense, like that's okay. That's your job as a coach, is to figure out everything that your team could maybe improve on or double down on. But as you take that fox mentality, turn it into a hedgehog mentality. And what I mean by that is you might have this fox approach of like five different things that we can do late in the year. Decide the highest leverage one, and then become a hedgehog and be singularly focused, really, really high clarity in attacking that. And one thing that we're going to dive into, I'm going to kick it to Tyler here in a second, but what I want to share today is a singular focus on how to hunt advantages better late in the season offensively. Before we dive into that, Tyler, welcome.
I'm just still picturing a hedgehog and a fox, and love the analogy from the animal kingdom. I would argue that all of us as coaches are unconsciously hedgehogs and can only be foxes consciously. What I mean by that is we've developed survival instincts as human beings. And we're all aware of the fight, flight, or freeze. When we're threatened, when our backs are up against the wall, when things aren't working, when we're feeling pressure as a coach, when we have to win a game, we all have, and I've used this analogy before, the tools that we're most comfortable with. That's the hedgehog. That's curling up into a ball, putting our spikes out, because our spikes work. Our spikes have kept us alive. So what are your spikes? If we don't know our spikes, if we don't know our natural reaction, we can't then consciously or intentionally develop a fox mentality. Because what's clever is a counter. What's clever is a counter. So if what we're good at, what's kept us alive, what we go to under pressure or when losing is the spikes. We have to know what the spikes are in order to be clever and be like, okay, what other evasive maneuver is going to keep us alive or help us win this game or whatnot? And we see this all the time when we talk to coaches. Let's say we're talking to a coach that is entertaining becoming a lock left coach. I've just been a 2-3 zone guy my entire career. Hedgehog, right? Or they're considering implementing the race, drive, and space offense. They want to play conceptually. I've just been a circle movement guy. My whole career, I've just been a continuity ball screen girl my whole career. The hedgehog mentality, or the fear of the unknown, or the fear of not being good at teaching something, or fear of lack of knowledge, or not having developed lots of experiences of success with a tool, always brings us back to hedgehog. Players under pressure will revert to their most deeply held habits. Coaches under pressure will revert to the tools that have worked in the past. That's just the way it is. So how do we become that fox? How do we break out of it? That really is what we're teaching, that savvy. That's what a savvy coach is. A savvy coach is courageous. And we all know this. Courage is not the absence of fear, but courage is choosing action despite of the fear. And it takes courage to uncurl out of that safe ball behind the spikes that have kept us safe for so long and try something new. Here's my challenge to all of our listeners. If you're willing to try new things, if you relentlessly adapt, if you continuously enhance what you're doing, you're a savvy coach. If the fear keeps you from being that type of curious learner, adaptive competitor, you are not yet a savvy coach. And that mind shift is why we're doing this podcast every week. We believe it's good for you. We believe it's good for the sport world. We believe it's good for everyone that you lead to be able to consciously adapt. And so we're trying to push you, nudge you out of the nest into that mentality.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm going to use a quick story on a coach that we consult with. Reached out to me and he had a Fox approach. Like, he was looking at like five different areas he wanted to get better at. We then transformed to a hedgehog approach. And hey, look, instead of trying to get better at rebounding, press, all these things, let's just get better at hunting advantages. And this is what I would implore coaches to, like you said, like, be courageous, like look for ways to enhance or to try new things. And there's going to be three steps to doing this. Is one, identify your best action, which ones, like, deeply held habits, right? That's what they're going to revert to under pressure. Which action are your players most comfortable running? That's step one. Step two, identify the coverage that you're fearing. I think a lot of coaches will operate from a place of fear. It's like, oh, well, we can't set a ball screen because they're just going to switch it. Okay, well, like, switching isn't the end all be all. Like, there's a way to punish switching, which we'll get to. So number one, ID that your highest leverage action. Number two, what is the coverage that's giving you the most trouble? And then number three is, how are you going to score against it? How are you going to hunt an advantage? And there's two ways to do that. We can completely prevent the coverage, which means we don't even allow defense to get into the coverage. And then the second approach would be, let's punish the coverage. Let's get them into the coverage, and then we're going to make them pay for coverage. And I wish coaches had more of that mentality of like, hey, oh, you're going to switch? Good. Like, we're going to screen below, stay below. We're going to hot stove screen. We're going to do whatever. We're going to, you know, get in the split action and slip it. Whatever it is, like, there is a way to hunt that advantage. I would argue you've probably practiced more against just traditional defense than you have switching, although switching is now becoming more traditional. You could argue it's like everybody really switches things. So, all right. So here's the idea behind prevent and punish.
Before you go to prevent and punish, can you define for everyone, myself included, what hot stove is? Because I'm not familiar with that term.
Yeah, hot stove.
Coverage, yeah.
We've all either touched the hot stove or have the analogy of, like, you can only tap a hot stove, right? If you stay longer, it's going to burn you. So that would be a ball screen weapon. And so I have broke down ball screen weapons in the pre-contact, on contact, and post-contact. So pre-contact is before we set the ball screen. On contact is when we set the ball screen. Post-contact is obviously what happens after. Short roll, pop, stampedes, all those things. So a hot stove would be on contact, meaning if Tyler is guarding the ball and I'm the ball screener coming to get him, then when it's the second Tyler touches me, I'm out. I'm either popping or rolling. So it's like right in between a traditional ball screen and a slip or a ghost. So hot stove, the second the defense touches me, I'm out. And that would be a way to maybe prevent the switch, is like, we're going to get out before they can even switch. Same thing with a ghost. Like, you're really preventing the switch, because that would be like a pre-contact weapon.
It's savvy. The S in savvy stands for simplicity. We believe that simplicity wins. Simplicity does not mean stupid. Simplicity does not mean a lack of sophistication. Simplicity is highly sophisticated. So what Mark just shared about hot stove, that's simplicity, but it's also incredibly specific and sophisticated. It's just very simple to communicate. We're hot stoving. Now, we didn't use, or Mark did not use, the term slip. That wouldn't be savvy, because slip is common vernacular that people use, and yet it's understood differently across thousands of programs and coaches. And so we at Savvy believe that you as a coach need to create your own language and vocabulary for your tribe, for your team, for your program, so that you can talk in secret without the enemy understanding, and so that you can provide context and meaning that couples perception with action. So that's kind of a sports science term that's very popular right now. NBA coaches are talking about in the press conferences, perception action coupling. Oh, Ty Jerome is so good at perception action coupling. And people are like, what? It's just basketball IQ, but another word for it. But it's like being able to recognize, perceive a thing, and then do an action. You want your language to be active. Hot stove is active language. When we perceive this sort of defense, we act hot stove, touch and go. So just that was kind of a masterclass quickly that Mark shared with us, but there's so much good coaching in there that I wanted to make sure to highlight it. So if I were to recap, have your own vocabulary, make your vocabulary very active, couple a perception with the action. So it's never just an action, it's an action linked to a read, a pattern, a visual cue, training the eyes.
Yeah. Okay, so this is another question that we get a lot. I was helping a coach put in a mayday action. For coaches that aren't familiar, a mayday action would be, hey, this possession's going nowhere. Let's just go to that go-to action that we talked about. Like, can we just get our two best players in this ball screen or our two best players in this action? His follow-up question was, okay, should we ghost it? Should we roll? Should we pop? And I'm like, hey, the stock answer, it depends. Like, what is the coverage, right? Now, you could go into this game and say, all right, looking at this team, they have really aggressive coverages, so we're going to hot stove it by default. So as you prep, it's, hey, every ball screen that we set, whether it's in Rose series or we're doing it with our porch player, everything is a hot stove because this is the coverage that we're likely going to see. And then you can always adjust from there. So that'd be a way to like simplify your game plan, but you're still going to punish them for being in that coverage. Okay. So let's continue with ball screen, and
let me interrupt one more time.
All right.
On what Mark just shared, this is my preference in game coaching. And there's definitely a place for what Mark shared, but my preference in in-game coaching is actually not to predetermine how we're going to attack a certain coverage, but rather observe and then remind. So, for example, if you know the way they're guarding our first ball screen action, it would benefit us to hot stove it during a free throw. Let's say Layla is the primary screener. I might just be, hey, Layla, try to hot stove that ball screen. Or Kiana. We're looking to ghost now. We're looking to ghost. And then we just have those conversations because we want to get to a place that when we call a mayday action and our two best players run a ball screen, the reason they're our best players is because they're the best at in the moment reading the defense and punishing it. Because the defense could change at any time. They could mess up, right? And, you know, if a level one coach is going to say, this is how we're attacking it because this is how they guard it most of the time. That's level one coach, level one team. Highest level coach, highest level team has prepared their players to read all coverages and to punish them. And the best players are the ones that have the most weapons to punish it. So I think there's just a continuum there that I wanted to highlight. But then let's say that you know, have an ATO at the end of the game and you have to score. You have two options. All right, there's a question for you, Mark. End of game. Down one, got a score. You choose to run a ball screen with your two best players. Are you guessing what coverage the opponent is going to be in and scripting what sort of read you want out of that ball screen? Or are you just like, read the D and score? Like, would you tell them to hot stove to win the game if they've been playing a certain way all game long? Or would you try to like, well, I know that he knows that I know that they're going to, right? Or do you just say, hey, I'm putting my two best players in the ball screen and I'm going to trust their skill set.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'd probably lean towards telling them what to do, but honestly, like going back to this prevent and punish, I might even go to prevent it, the coverage, and not even let them get to that step.
Would you do that with some sort of false action first or pre-screen or what?
If this is a ball screen, gosh, there's a lot of ways to prevent coverage. Top two that come to mind, like a minor adjustment could be, all right, this is our action that we've run. Let's just run a ram screen into it. So now somebody is going to screen for our eventual ball screener, which just gets them late in the coverage. So now we're preventing them from the part hedge, the switch, the down, whatever they're in. Another one is a favorite of mine is just flipping the angle. So if a ball screener is coming and we're setting a ball screen going to the middle of the floor, as I leave the shell being the 3-point line, I'm going to change my angle where I get that hedge or that switch, my screener's defender on the quote unquote wrong side of the screen, which is going to prevent coverage. I would probably do something like that, knowing that that way, if that coach adjusts their coverage, doesn't really matter. We're doing something to get them late in the coverage.
Okay, that's good. Follow-up question. Would you ATO, it's after timeout, would you ATO a ram screen into a ball screen if in practice you have never practiced that? Would you implement that in the game if you have not practiced that combination?
I'm a big believer in not doing things that you don't practice.
Would not? Okay.
I would
not. What if you have practiced just ram screens separate from ball screens, but have never linked the two in this way?
I would do that.
You would do that.
And I think this is a good example too of like even back to your first question, head coach, you know your team better than anybody. Like I think in that moment, if you're like, oh, this is a stretch, I don't know if we're gonna be able to do this, let's give it a shot. I'm not doing it. But like you know your team. And like you said, like if RAM is in your vocabulary, if you've run RAM before, then I think that's the beauty of running conceptual offense and like having that specific language and those specific actions that you can blend together in any type of context. So yes, I would do that. Whether you're a first-time listener or a regular listener, I want to thank you for being here. And if there's something that you've heard and you want to go deeper with us, the absolute best way is to join our Savvy Basketball membership. You can get ongoing support from Tyler and I and our exclusive community, but you also get our entire classroom of courses and weekly live coaching calls. So if you have questions on offense, defense, player development, practice design, culture building, anything that you need support on, we're here to help. And the best way to get that help is through our Savvy Basketball membership. I have our 7-day free trial on. If you want to give it a shot, the link is in the description below. All right, back to the episode.
Okay. Follow-up question to the follow-up question. Best player isolated in space to score or best players in an action? Which one do you go to?
Depends on how good my best player is. But, you know, sometimes your best player, assuming he is just like a killer, is the best advantage, is the biggest advantage you can get, especially in that moment, like late in the seat, like late in the game. Like, it's because we don't, like you've alluded to this, like we don't know the coverage. We don't know what they're going to do, but we know our dude is better than your dude or our dudette is better than your dudette.
Yeah. That's the second time I've heard the term dudette in the last 24 hours, and it was jarring both times. Really took me back. Okay, I would err on the side, assuming two teams of equal strength and our best player is of equal strength to your best player. Good offense always beats good defense. I would err on the side of ISOing best player in space over action every single time down the stretch. Here's why for me. Every time you introduce another person or more action or another defender, I think our risk of error goes up. Whereas we might not create as big of an advantage in isolation, but I also think our risk of turnover and getting no shot attempt out of it actually goes down when we go into just isolation. Yeah, those are just kind of my general thoughts. I think that obviously I would trend towards action if we didn't have that Kevin Durant player. Okay. Also player type. Let's say our best player is LeBron James. That's our best player. Well, LeBron James' best quality is not isolation scoring. So if our best player is LeBron James, I'm not going in ISO, which has actually been the downfall of the late games for LeBron James his entire career.
What is LeBron James' ideal scoring situation?
Well, he would say a high ball screen for him. I would actually say I would like to have him catching the ball with advantage. He is so good with advantage. He's not great at punishing advantage off of a live dribble. Right. Yeah. So if he can get any sort of a closeout, any sort of a short roll, any sort of a downhill, then so if we could actually get LeBron, like, I don't even know, you probably know this action, but where you start your best player way, way back in the backcourt, right? And they get the ball downhill on the run with a flat screen, you know, somewhere near half or just over half. I would want LeBron in that sort of a situation if possible. Yeah.
Any kind of stampede for LeBron, like when he's running into his catch, I mean, you have one of the best athletes ever, 6'8", however many, 240 pounds he is, like going downhill, that is super hard to guard without fouling. And he's a good passer. He's got really good vision. Yes. One might say he passes too much in those.
I actually would not be one of those.
Yeah, well, when I think of late game LeBron, I think of like step back three, which is like, dude, that's so not your game. Like, get down.
There's been many times, especially in the Cleveland years, where he got a lot of heat for passing up a shot he could have taken to a wide open 3-point shooter that missed. I just am of the belief that that is a better shot. Jordan Kerr is a better shot than something contested off balance, like stand still wide open three by a good shooter. I will take that shot above anything contested off the dribble.
Quick sidebar here. I told you this the other day in one of our meetings that, like, at night, I'm just going on YouTube and just watching random stuff. And I came across Jordan highlights. And, man, it was so much fun to watch his highlights. I just haven't seen Jordan play in, obviously, years and years and years. But just incredible how explosive he was. And, it'd be interesting to see him in today's game because he wasn't a great three-point shooter. Neither is LeBron. But again, his mid-range game, his ability to get to the rack, and then just like a plethora of him just dunking on 7-foot centers. Like Alonzo Mourning, Patrick Ewing, like just all on a poster. It's pretty fun to watch.
If Jordan played today, he would be a good three-point shooter. He developed into a solid three-point shooter late in his career.
Yeah.
He just didn't put any attention to it. Okay, here's something jarring. I saw an interview with Michael Jordan when he was younger. And then I just watched him talk. And in this particular interview, he reminded me just his mannerisms, his speech, his tone, his everything reminded me of a current NBA player, how he talks in interviews. Care to guess who?
I've always thought Kobe tried to be like Mike in another way, but he's not current, obviously. Rest in peace. Yep. Current player. I don't know.
Anthony Edwards.
Okay.
You need to go.
Do you know the conspiracy theory?
Well, it made me believe the conspiracy theory even more because I was like, this is jarring. Go ahead. What's the conspiracy theory?
The conspiracy theory is Ant is Michael's son, right? Yeah.
So there, we won't go into the details, but apparently conspiracy theory is like there's this place called Grand Cypress where Jordan would go and play golf and hang out, and it was notorious for parties. It wasn't Epstein Island or anything, but it was definitely party central. And then that is the area where Anthony Edwards grew up. So that's the conspiracy. Go watch it for yourself. But even just how they move on the court is eerily similar as well.
Yeah. All right. The term conspiracy theory was concocted by the CIA to make people sound crazy. But if you think about it, like conspiracies are real all the time, you know, like, but when
you and I conspire daily,
exactly. Like a conspiracy is like a strategic plan to do something. Right.
Yep.
But this conspiracy theory anyway, it's like taboo now, but that's exactly what the CIA wanted. But that's
so do you think that humanity has landed on the moon?
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Oh. But I don't think what we saw is actually the footage. I think
that's the most common story that I've uncovered in my research as well. Is that was filmed in a stage for public consumption, but the actual moon landing. So what makes you think we landed on the moon if there's not even video evidence?
There has been confirmation from other countries, and I could be wrong on this, but from China and Russia, who would not do the U.S. any favors in the PR department, saying that they have seen the stuff that the astronauts left on the moon. Now,
couldn't we shoot things into the moon?
Maybe. The moon is also proven to be hollow. So after we land on the moon, allegedly, I don't know if we did or not. Gun to my head, I would have to think about it. But we sent another, rocket up there, something to land on there. And they said when it landed, the moon rang for like hours, which would indicate that it's hollow. Also, the moon is, I'm going to butcher this, so somebody correct me in the comments below.
If anyone is not interested right now in what we're talking about, just go ahead and tune out.
We'll see you next time.
This is derailed significantly.
Yeah.
But we're having fun, and this is our podcast. So thanks for being here.
Yeah. And we'll bring it back maybe to hunting advantages. Okay. So the moon is a fourth of the size of the Earth, and it's also a fourth of the distance away from the sun, which is why we get the eclipse, which is just like, that just seems like way too perfect for me. Well, so conspiracy.
Hashtag God, but go ahead.
Okay. So the conspiracy, yes. But I think the conspiracy is that the moon is an artificial satellite that was put there to balance our atmosphere and all those things, because the moon obviously impacts the tides and all those things and makes Earth habitable. And you could say it's God, right? Like God made this perfect situation for mankind to occur and all that. But
I would say it's ludicrous. I'm gonna say it's ludicrous to think that any of this happened by chance, down to our cellular makeup, to like the absolute improbability that life could occur on its own without some intelligent design.
Yes, I think what a non-believer would say is that intelligent design was from, I'm just going to say, alien life that came in and altered our DNA, because our DNA has like two strands of DNA that just don't make sense. And it's like when we say, hey, we're 98% the same as an ape, well, like that 2% is like, it's not found anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So it had to come from some type of intelligent design. Here's a theory that I heard.
Is it a conspiracy theory or just a theory?
Well, let's call it a conspiracy theory.
And what makes a conspiracy theory again? Is it two people being intentional, or does it mean that it is anti-establishment?
Anti-establishment.
Okay.
Because that the CIA wants to make anything that's a conspiracy theory taboo.
So the CIA are the bad guys? We don't like them?
I'm not going to publicly say that. I actually, this is we're going way down. This is fun.
This might be a special episode.
Yeah, this might have to be a two-parter, and this is just like a weird one-off.
This one gets put on Mark's personal private YouTube.
If you are still listening, you are one of us. Why are you not a savvy member?
If you're still listening, you're invited to the poker home game.
Yeah,
Mark and I are doing.
You need to be at our in-person coaching clinic.
Yes.
Okay. I'll make this one quick. The conspiracy theory is that these aliens or whatever non-human intelligence are really us from the future, and they are having trouble procreating. So they come down and manipulate our DNA, to help them in the future or something like that. That's kind of the,
I think I've seen that movie.
Well, I don't even know if it's a movie. I get mine.
No, there is a movie. It's actually a series. Is it called Continuum? I don't know. I watched a couple episodes. It wasn't very well done, but the idea is similar to that. And yeah, it's good.
Okay. If you're into, we'll close the loop on, okay, wait, hold on. Did we land on the moon? You haven't answered that.
If I don't know either. I think there's reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
I have reasonable doubt that we've never actually cracked the firmament, exited the firmament. Look that up if you want. So I have reasonable doubt there.
There is a radiation belt that goes around the Earth that
separates us from space, essentially.
Yes, the Van Ryan belt. It's probably wrong again in the comments. Correct me, please. But
this might be the most commented episode we've ever had. just correcting our understanding of science.
That's right. But anyway, it's just like a ton of radiation. There is no evidence, or there's no, yeah, I guess, evidence, or it has not been proven that a human could make it through that belt alive. Yes. The argument is like they were going so fast through that belt that they were only exposed to radiation for a little amount of time. But like this belt is like, I don't know, like 80,000 miles or something long. I don't know. Also, the moon is just a really, really, it's really far away.
It's really far away.
Yeah.
So, okay. So if I had a gun to my head right now and I had to bet, I'm still betting we did land on the moon. I'm still betting that, but it's like doubling down on 10 versus an 8 right now.
Yeah.
8 or 9. Yeah. Somewhere in there.
Yeah. Or double like 11 against the face. It's like, you have to do it, but you're like,
you know? I actually prefer 11 on a face versus 10 over a 9.
Yeah, I would too, because you have 11. Yes.
You have 11. There's a chance you have an unbeatable hand. Whereas right. Like there's yeah.
Yeah. Or like, yeah. Okay.
You only have to get an ace to get an unbeatable hand on a 10. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What's a better double? What double do you like more? No math. What double do you like more? Okay.
Just that's more fun to play.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or which one are you more excited to double on? Okay. Soft 18 versus a 5. Soft 18 versus a 5, or 9 versus 7.
Soft 18.
I have more fun with the 9 versus a 7 because no one ever sees that one.
Yeah.
And everyone at the table is like, "What are you doing?" But actually, mathematically, you should double 9 on a 7, everyone.
Okay. And the same with the soft 18, which I don't think a lot of people.
Which is actually, it's a stronger bet. The soft 18 is a stronger just because of the bus card.
Because it's soft, yeah. But yeah. But also, I think a lot of people would, the common folk would stay on that and not double a soft 18.
Do you hit 12 on a 2?
Yes, once and only once.
Do you hit 13 on a 2?
Once and only once.
Do you hit 13 on a 2 of the true count is 4 or above?
No.
Correct. All right. And that concludes the portion of Blackjack Count.
If you are interested in hunting advantages late in the season, let's just bring this back to basketball. We'll give a little bit of value.
No, I've got a connection. A connection.
Go ahead.
Hedgehogs, foxes. The exploration and conversation Mark and I just had is maybe an extreme example of a fox mentality. Like curious exploration of many ideas that we may not be confident in or familiar with, but always looking for any unidentified opportunities, advantages, understanding. And again, I think that's just, I would argue that that is a mindset of a really good coach, of a clever coach. For example, Mike Neighbors, who has been on the pod, he's now with the LA Sparks. He was head coach at University of Washington, Arkansas. Incredibly intelligent and eclectic individual. He's posting on Twitter right now. I don't know if you've seen, Mark, but a basketball thing. I'm not sure if it's like a song, a TV show, or a movie, right? That one should listen to. Maybe I'm missing the categories. Is that right?
Yeah, well, he's notorious for Lyst. And yeah. what I'm seeing on his Twitter feed lately is like this, his handwritten notes on grid paper. Yeah. So I haven't dug deep into those, but yeah, he's posting some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, the man is he's a musician. He plays in a band. He has massive knowledge of pop culture, TV shows, movies. He has a list of the best movies of all time. All that to say is, the most clever Fox-like coaches do have like inquisitive minds that are applied across all genres. And I would encourage you as a coach to just become more curious, inquisitive, and question the status quo. That's the personality and mindset of nearly every successful coach that I've encountered. I can't think of a successful coach that is not conversational on a wide array of topics.
Yeah. But, and here's why, because they relate everything back to coaching. Like you watch a TV show and it's like, oh, that's really good. I'm going to say two things to wrap here. Our team meetings used to be so fun because I would bring in pop culture things and relate it to the theme of the week, to our vision for the year, to our game plan, whatever it is. One of my favorites is there was just like, I guess it was a reality, like dance competition. Think like American Idol, but for dance. It was called like
Dancing with the Stars, Mark.
okay. World of Dance or something. And they had this group that was like so like technical in sync, where it was like three or four or five people dancing, and they were just like, it looked like it was like copy pasted of the same person. So my thing was like, hey, like our vision was around like teamwork or something. So it was like, these people have to be like so locked in on doing their job, but for the group, right? For the betterment of the group. So like we would watch this group to start every one of our team meetings. We'd watch one of their dances on the thing. It was just like a good way to engage the team and have fun. But I think that's what you were saying is like coaches are well-rounded, well-versed in a lot of different things. It's because their lens is like, we're always on, but I can take a TV show, I can take, you know, a book, I can take an interaction with somebody, and my mind is always going like, oh, how do I relate this to my team? Or now our team are our 600 savvy members that we serve every day. So like everything that we do is like, oh, how do we go bring this and serve our members? Okay. So that's first thing. Second thing, I'm going to go hedgehog Fox here. If you're hunting advantages late in the season, if you're preparing for teams or games late in the season, you might have five ideas. Pick the one that you are most comfortable teaching. Pick the one that is the highest leverage, and then go all in on that. Instead of like, all right, we're playing this team. We got to get better in the ball screen. We got to get better in our split action. We can do this and like really punish, you know, this coverage that they do. Just pick one and execute that thing really, really well. So then you go from a Fox of like all these ideas, like, yes, we have all these opportunities, but what is the one that's going to show up the most in the game, and that's going to be the highest leverage for us? Then you go hedgehog mode, and you have that one, you know, way to attack whatever they're doing, or one way to defend whatever they're doing to create advantages.
Great tie back to the beginning of Hedgehog and Fox. If you are still with us, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate you. Average watch time of these episodes is about 8 minutes is the average watch time. So that means that if you watched all the way to the end, you are special. And I'll end with two things. One, exciting announcement. We have a savvy player training community for basketball players that's going to be launching in the coming months. We won't reveal the partner yet, but we have a great partner who's a world-renowned basketball trainer that's going to be providing leadership to this. So keep that in mind for your players this offseason. It'll be the place for them to train virtually and online. That's going to be in line with how a savvy coach coaches. Two, one book. Mark talked about World of Dance for his team. One book that if I was to read a book or watch with my team would be Ender's Game. I would want all of my players to adopt Ender Wiggins' mindset to space warfare in their basketball play. So take that with you. I read it with my daughters. That was the last book that we all read together. And as we're trying to develop mindsets, not knowledge base. We want to develop lenses to see the world, not remember information. So take that and do with it as you will. Mark, this was fun. I enjoyed the conspiracy half even more than the coaching half.
Me too. In the comments, type your highest leverage action, or if we landed on the moon or not. That would be more interesting.
I want that one. Did we land on the moon or not?
Let's do that. And then mental note for your dudes or
dudettes,
player community coming.
Yes. Right. Wait, no, don't go yet. Mark, what percent of all listeners do you think we landed on the moon? What percent think yes?
60.
Okay, I was gonna go 80.
I think if you rewind 10 years, 20 years, it'd be like 80, 90. I think we're starting to sway in the other direction now.
Yeah, but the people that comment are definitely people that think no.
Absolutely. the comments will be like
the yesers don't comment. The yesers are hedgehogged and they don't interact. They just, yeah.
The yesers are not listening right now. We lost them a long time ago.
The yesers are never listening again. We just lost half our subscribers. But no problem. We've vetted the audience.
Can't wait to see the analytics on this one.
Just like the it's gonna be drop off.
Or it's going to be way up there and we just do a completely different podcast going forward.
Oh, man, this is fun.
All right, this is fun, y'all. Stay savvy.
Stay savvy.
Thanks for making it to the end of the hours. And before I let you go, I want to make sure you can continue to learn with us in between episodes by joining our newsletter. You'll get weekly coaching insights to your inbox, which includes coaching notes from every episode. No spam, just clear, practical tools that'll make you a better coach. You can sign up at savvycoach.com. Stay savvy.